Good morning, Your Honor, and may it please the court. My name is John DePew. I'm an attorney with the National Security Division of the Department of Justice. This case presents the question whether, considered individually or collectively, the successive orders of the military judge of a military commission dismissing a case for lack of in personam jurisdiction and the ensuing decision of the U.S. Court of Appeals for Military Commissions reversing that decision and remanding the case back to the military judge for fact-finding is an appealable order under the Military Commissions Act. As the Supreme Court explained long ago in Abney versus United States, in a criminal case, the right to prosecute an appeal is purely a creature of statute. Thus, the defendant must be able to bring himself within the terms of that statute in order to seek redress in an appellate court. The statutes that the defendant relies upon in this case neither afford him that right nor vest this court with jurisdiction over this particular interlocutory matter. In this respect, it's our submission that three separate statutes in the Military Commissions Act are germane to this court's jurisdiction. First, and most importantly, under Section 950G, subparagraph A1A, this court has the exclusive jurisdiction to review the final judgments of a military commission as reviewed by the convening authority.
What's the wording exactly of the section?
Except as provided in subparagraph B, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit shall have exclusive jurisdiction to consider the vitality of a final judgment rendered by a military commission, parenthesis, as approved by the convening authority under this chapter.
Okay.
That jurisdiction, however, is limited by the ensuing subparagraph that requires the defendant to exhaust all prior appeals or waive them. Finally, under Section 950G, subparagraph B, except as provided elsewhere in this statute, that is Section 950G, and notwithstanding any other provision of law, no court, judge, or justice may review or pass on any claim or cause of action relating to a prosecution, trial, or judgment or conviction in a case involving a military commission proceeding. In applying these statutes to this particular case, I must confess I'm somewhat of at a loss because the defendant has taken three different positions throughout this litigation as to what order he thinks is appealable and is subject to this court's appellate jurisdiction under this regime. So, out of an abundance of caution, I'm going to address all three very briefly. First, when last October 9th, the defendant filed a petition for review, he identified as the order to be reviewed the decision of the court of the appellate court. That decision did three things. First, it reversed the decision of a military judge saying that there is no in personam jurisdiction over the defendant. Second, it established a regime for determining whether in personam jurisdiction exists, that being whether the defendant is in fact an unlawful alien enemy combatant, the statutory language that vests a military court commission with jurisdiction. And finally, it remanded that case back to the military judge for fact-finding to determine whether, in fact, the defendant was an unlawful alien enemy combatant. Now, as the defendant has subsequently conceded at page 7 of his response to our brief, this wasn't the final judgment of a military commission at all, that being the trial body, much less the final judgment as reviewed by the convening authority, language that I will address presently. Indeed, there's nothing final about this decision. It's an interlocutory order. It remands the case for fact-finding, as I said earlier. Now, in an apparent attempt to circumvent these threshold issues, the defendant has cited Section 908 of the Manual for Military Commissions, an executive order drafted by the Secretary of Defense that, in somewhat broader terms, explains how a defendant is to assert his appellate right after any decision of the Court of Military Commission review. The problem with this is that the last time I checked with the Constitution, Article 3, Section 1, vests the Congress with the exclusive authority to determine the jurisdiction of this court, and not the Secretary of Defense. Therefore,
well, I understood the argument to be that simply the regulations are some indication of the Department of Defense's interpretation of the statute. I didn't think it was going any further than
well,
that.
Well, I can't expand the very narrow and precise language of the statute. It's got to be harmonized with that language. The language of the statute is very explicit. It talks about final judgments as approved by the convening authority. Now, when we pointed out some of these problems in our motion to dismiss, the defendant filed another brief, and he said, well, it wasn't the decision of the Court of Military Commission Review that we want to appeal at all. It's rather the now reversed decision of the military judge.
Doesn't that have to be the one that's appealed under that fairly unusual wording of the statute?
Yes, it does, Your Honor. That's our submission.
Yeah.
And it's a very confined and limited scope of decisions by that judge that get appealed, notwithstanding the reversal problem, which I'll address momentarily. Now, military jurisprudence, the convening authority, is an unusual animal, one you don't run into in practicing before the Article III courts. He's the officer that determines in the first instance whether a case will be referred to trial and tried by a court-martial. Second, after the court-martial proceeding is over, it's the convening authority who, with the assistance of his staff judge advocate who writes a post-trial review, determines whether the findings are correct in law and fact, and approves the sentence. Well, that's exactly the same regime that's been applied under the Military Commissions Act. So when the Military Commissions Act in this section talks about a final judgment as approved by the convening authority, they mean exactly the same thing as we generally understand a final judgment to mean in the criminal context, a sentence. Of course, there was no sentence issued in this particular case. Indeed, the order here has now been reversed and vacated, so it has no continuing validity whatsoever. Defendant's third tack here is, well, doesn't fit with any of these things. It falls within the collateral order doctrine. Unfortunately for the defendant, the collateral order doctrine, as the Supreme Court explained in Abney, is based on the specific wording of 28 U.S.C. section 1291, that being a final decision issued by a district judge. The Abney Court explained, however, that the phrase final decision was broader and not coterminous with the term final judgment, the language used in the Military Commissions Act. So we don't have the latitude here that we do under 1291 to engraft upon the MCA a collateral order doctrine. There are other reasons why you can't apply the collateral order doctrine here, even if that were not the case. First, there's nothing final about this order, as I've said before. And second, it's susceptible to remedy in connection with the final judgment. It's not like a question raising a double jeopardy claim, speech and debate clause claim, or a bail entitlement claim. The three categories of cases that in the criminal context are viewed as being susceptible to review under the collateral order doctrine. The courts have repeatedly rejected claims that in personam jurisdiction is subject to similar review. I will reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honors.
We'll hear from the rather hard to put the terminology on it this morning as to who's the petitioner respond. I guess the respondent for the purposes of this, anyhow, the other party. We'll hear from you, Counsel.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. My name is Carl Thompson. I'm representing petitioner. But we're defending against the government's motion to dismiss. Congress passed the MCA in the wake of the Supreme Court's decision in Hamdan, which emphasized the importance of putting military commission proceedings on a sound legal footing before they take place, and recognized the compelling interest in knowing in advance whether a detainee may be tried by a military commission that is arguably without any basis in law. If the government's reading of this statute is correct, a fundamental jurisdictional question, whether the military commission can determine for itself whether a detainee is an unlawful enemy combatant subject to its jurisdiction, or if that determination has to be made by an independent tribunal, that question will not be heard until after a military commission trial takes place. That doesn't make sense.
It brings us to where the issue is, all right, Counsel. I try to remember that you're here only on the motion and not on the merits.
That's correct, Your Honor. Okay. Under Section 950G of the MCA, there are two prerequisites to this court's jurisdiction that apply in every case, the military commissions must issue a final judgment, and all other appeals under the MCA must be waived or exhausted. And there's a third prerequisite, approval by the convening authority, that applies when the judgment involves findings in a sentence. The first two prerequisites for jurisdiction have been met here. The military commission issued a final...
Really, is there a final judgment extant at this time?
We believe...
There was a judgment entered, but wasn't it vacated?
The CMCR, the Court of Military Commission Review, reversed the final judgment, reversed the judgment of the military commission. However, for example, if in the federal court system, a district court enters a judgment dismissing charges against a defendant, the Court of Appeals reverses, and then the Supreme Court reverses the Court of Appeals, the district courts...
But there, the Supreme Court generally is acting under a writ of certiorari. Your procedural status is not... not the same, it's just parallel.
We would argue that it's analogous in that if this court asserts jurisdiction now, that final judgment of the military commission can, as it were, be reactivated. So
it may have a problem for you right there in that sentence. We don't assert jurisdiction. The Supreme Court does. They have the right to exercise certiorari and call up a case to them. We have only those jurisdictions that are given us by statute, and this one does not unambiguously give us that jurisdiction where there's not extant a final judgment.
That reading of final judgment, respectfully, and it's the reading that the government proposes, is essentially a way of saying that there is an implicit requirement that the CMCR's decision be final. That is, if the CMCR's reversal of the military commission can destroy finality, that means that the CMCR's decision has to be final. It has to affirm the military commission's dismissal rather than reversing it. But there is no CMCR finality requirement in the statute. And if you look at Section 950GD, which governs Supreme Court review, you'll see that it expressly confers Supreme Court jurisdiction only over a final judgment of the Court of Appeals. And it cites the statute that governs Supreme Court review of state court judgments from state courts rather than federal courts. So it expressly states that there's this finality requirement. There is no such requirement for the CMCR. So the real question is, what did Congress mean by final judgment here? Did it mean final judgment as opposed to interlocutory judgment, as is covered in 950D, or did it mean to impose this oblique, indirect requirement that the CMCR's decision be final? And we would submit that the former...
as approved by the intervening authority. Is that decision final when it has been vacated, at least in part, by the CMCR?
I believe the best construction of the statute is that for purposes of what this statutory language means, yes, it is final. There's no dispute. I don't take the government to dispute, and as Your Honor said, it was clearly final at the time it was issued. So does this language in this statute intend to say final so long as it hasn't been reversed by the CMCR, or does it mean final as opposed to?
Clause about all other appeals having been waived or exhausted.
Correct, Your Honor.
Are you in that posture where you still have a remand and presumably a second round of appeal if you lose there? I mean, you could win on remand.
Just to clarify, the issue that was before that on which the military judge dismissed was not, as my colleague said, whether or not petitioner is an unlawful enemy combatant. It's which tribunal, which body has the authority to make that determination. So that's not an issue that we think really survives final judgment. And the language, though, that Your Honor was referring to provides that other appeals under this chapter have been waived or exhausted. And we take that as a reference to appeals under the CMCR, which have been exhausted because the government took that appeal. And with respect to the language requiring approval by the convening authority...
Would there be a potential second round of appeal at the time it goes back to the MC? I realize you're not planning on being back before the CSRT, but...
Your Honor,
you go get through the commission the second time. Can't one of you appeal again?
Yes, Your Honor, we could appeal and under our collateral order argument, there are reasons why we think that the question, the threshold jurisdictional question, who has the authority to make this determination, would not survive intact for that post post-trial appeal.
That's where we need to get.
Okay.
Why is that? We're jumping to the other ground of your argument and the collateral order.
The collateral order doctrine, as you know, there are three requirements. The order that's on review has to conclusively determine a disputed question. The question has to be separate from the merits of the action, and then it has to be effectively unreviewable.
That's the one we're coming to, is the third.
Okay, and there are at least two reasons why this question is effectively unreviewable on appeal. The first, as this court itself recognized in Hamdan, in the military commission context, setting aside a judgment after trial and conviction insufficiently redresses the defendant's right not to be tried by a tribunal that has no jurisdiction. So this is unlike a civilian district court context where the interest in a personal jurisdiction challenge is in not being subjected to a judgment by a court that has no jurisdiction. Both this court and the Supreme Court in Hamdan and the Supreme Court in Quirin recognize that because military tribunals have very limited jurisdiction over only a specific status of person, the injury in being subjected to trial before a body that doesn't have jurisdiction cannot be sufficiently redressed post-trial. There is also a public harm that can't be undone after the fact. The Supreme Court has recognized that when there is a public interest in avoiding a trial altogether, that's an interest that satisfies the collateral order doctrine. Here, if this court would wait.
The doctrine is a very limited. Laying aside the question of public interest for the moment, what's the closest analogy you have to a case where it's been considered effectively unreviewable on circumstances paralleling yours?
Well, we would just point to the core principle recognized by the Supreme Court that statutory finality requirements should be construed so as to preserve fundamental issues for appeal that will not be preserved on appeal.
That
so Matthews,
to where we are, but we've already gotten to where we are. What is the closest case you have that says that collateral order is available in a circumstance like yours?
We don't have a direct parallel. I would refer specifically to the practice under the courts martial, which I think was the model for this statute, where if a court martial dismisses charges against the defendant and they appeal to the intermediate level appellate court, the Court of Criminal Appeals, then and the government prevails at that level, then the defendant has a right to take an immediate appeal to the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces.
Is that a statutory right, or is he invoking a doctrine of collateral order?
That one is a statutory right, but the collateral order doctrine, as you know, is a general principle. It's been applied.
Well, aside that one, that's not analogous at all. That's a statutory right. You're looking here for collateral review.
Correct. The collateral order doctrine is an interpretation of statutory finality requirements, and we would argue that provides a basis for interpreting the finality requirement in this statute broadly in order to permit review in this situation.
Well, we don't review finality broadly. We review that exception narrowly, and the Supreme Court says that interlocutory review on a collateral order basis is to be narrowly constrained, and I'm looking for a case that's something like this where there has been a collateral review granted.
I don't have a direct analog, and I think part of the reason is that it's an unusual situation where you do not have an Article III court hearing the criminal trial in the first place. You have a military commission, a military tribunal, and that raises the kinds of special problems that the court talked about in Hamdan and to an extent in Quirin. Again, the MCA was enacted directly in the wake of Hamdan, which made very clear that it's important to get all of the procedures in place before these commission trials take place. If this court were to reverse them afterwards and say that the military commission itself did not have authority to make the unlawful enemy combatant determination, every single trial that had gone forward would have to be undone and redone, and the public's confidence in the whole process could be undermined.
Any reason to believe there is a large number of cases in which the military commission made that determination as opposed to the CSRT making the determination and then the trial proceeding? I don't know the answer.
Yes, Your Honor, the CSRT proceedings as they were convened simply determined that detainees were enemy combatants. It didn't take the additional step of determining that they were unlawful enemy combatants. So what the military judge determined in this case was that CSRT determination was insufficient to provide a jurisdictional basis for military commission trials. So the question before us now is whether the military judge...
Yeah, I understand that.
Okay.
Is that the norm? Is that going to be the same question in lots of cases, or were there other cases in which which the CSRT did make the determination.
I understand.
Of unlawful enemy combatant status.
My understanding, Judge.
Relating a horrible here, that all of these other cases are going to have to be reviewed. I don't know whether that's true or not, and this is not a gotcha question. This is informational.
I understand. My understanding is that the CSRTs did not ever make the unlawful enemy combatant determination, partly because the definition of unlawful enemy combatant wasn't promulgated until after most of the CSRT proceedings had taken place. And that the statutory language convening the CSRTs, I believe, uses the phrase enemy combatant rather than unlawful enemy combatant. So this is a core jurisdiction. I would just point out that the government read this statute in its rules in exactly the same way as we're proposing to read it, as permitting an interlocutory appeal in exactly the situation we're in, which is the same thing that happens under the court's martial procedures, which are the model for the MCA. And the government's rules, with all respect, they do not simply set forth the prerequisites for appeal. They clearly state that when the CMCR decides any appeal, that the petitioner, if it's adverse to the accused, that the accused can take an immediate appeal.
So is your position that this language approved by the convening authority then doesn't apply here because it's a collateral, you're under the collateral order doctrine, and so you don't have to?
Well, Your Honor, even under the statute, we think that it doesn't apply because we think that phrase has to be read in light of the language of the statute as a whole. And if you look at section 950B, which is the section that gives power to the convening authority to approve or modify sentences, that language, that provision consistently uses the phrase findings and a sentence, and never uses the phrase final judgment. If you turn to 950G, this court's jurisdictional provision, it uses the phrase final judgment. So reading it in light of the language as a whole, the convening authority's approval or decision to commute a sentence is only implicated in situations where there are findings in the sentence and there weren't findings in the sentence in this case. So the function of the language in the context of this court's jurisdictional provision is simply to clarify what it is that this court determines the validity of. So if the military commission finds a detainee guilty on a particular charge and the convening authority commutes it, this court would determine the validity of the lesser included charge.
Not be read, counsel, or reason. That is precisely why you do not have a final judgment for review here, because it has not been through the convening authority.
Again, we think that if you look at the statute as a whole, 950B does not give the convening authority the power to modify or approve every final judgment. It only refers, consistently, never refers to final judgments, and it only refers to findings in a sentence. So
we should not be reviewing this. Can it not be reasoned from 950B, taken in conjunction with 950G, that we should not be reviewing that until there are findings in a sentence?
Well, Your Honor, 950G does not use the phrase findings in a sentence in your jurisdictional provision. The conferral
jurisdiction. It uses the phrase as approved by the convening authority.
A parenthetical phrase.
Back to 950B, the convening authority issues its approval or not, there has to be a report, at least notice to the convening authority of findings and sentence. That's sub A of 950B.
Correct.
So under sub A of 950B, should we not think Congress was contemplating a commission order that had in it the findings and sentence, everything it could possibly have in it, before we would be getting it on final review?
As 950B demonstrates, Congress was capable of using the phrase findings and sentence when it wanted to, and it could very easily have written this provision with findings and sentence.
Or it could have used incorporation by reference. Congress is capable of that. So if you know things, don't go back and do your taxes.
Yes, Your Honor.
April 15,
and I luckily filed
them. In the G section, as approved by the convening authority. He's taking that in light of the B section. The convening authority approves when there have been findings and sentence.
Well, again, the wording is different. We don't see any direct indication that the parenthetical phrase, which is akin to saying as modified on rehearing and has the function I described earlier, means to undo and change the definition of final judgment, which is a different phrase that's used. Further, we would say that the court
would be the office of that parenthetical in your construction.
It would clarify to this court. So, for example, if the military commission found a detainee guilty on a particular charge, the convening authority, it doesn't just have authority to approve a sentence, it can also modify it in whole or in part. So let's say there were a finding of guilt on a particular charge, the convening authority then knocks that down to a finding of guilt on a lesser included charge. It would clarify to this court, when this court determining the validity of that military commission judgment, whether it was to determine the validity of the original military commission judgment or the one on the lesser included charge, and it would say do it on the lesser included charge.
We have helped you way past the end of your allotted time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Have further questions. I'm going to finally subside, and we'll hear again from the government. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
How much time does he have left?
I'll be very brief. Thank you, Your Honor. I'll be very brief. Having been at one time in an earlier life the chief judge of the U.S. Army Court of Criminal Appeals, I know a little bit about that system, and it's entirely different from the system that's involved here. The defendant can draw no benefit from the distinctive language of the Uniform Code of Military Justice relating to appellate review to assist him. With respect to cases going from the intermediate court, that is the Service Court of Criminal Appeals, to the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces, that's the court that sits right across the street, the provision provides as follows. Pardon, Your Honor?
They sit in our old building.
Yeah, your old building, that's exactly right. It provides as follows. The accused may petition the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces for review of a decision of the Court of Criminal Appeals within 60 days. The language, the jurisdiction vesting language here doesn't speak of decision of the intermediate appellate court. It talks about the final judgment of the military commission as approved by the convening authority. Now, the defendant would love to read that language out of the statute or read it to mean when it's appropriate to review or something like that. But to paraphrase Rusella versus United States, that's not the way the statute was written. And that provision tells us exactly what Congress was thinking when it used the phrase final judgment, because what the convening authority approves, just as he does under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, is sentences. Indeed, the language final judgment is used there in exactly the same context as it is with respect to the Article III courts and is recognized in the Supreme Court's jurisprudence on the collateral order doctrine.
Thank you, counsel. Seeing no questions, the case is submitted.